Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Real Clear Politics Takeaway for Tuesday, January 31st. I'm Tom Bevin, co-founder and president of RCP.
And I'm Carl Cannon, Washington Bureau Chief.
Carl, my condolences to you and your 49ers losing over the weekend to the Philadelphia Eagles.
I'm in mourning, Tom. It was a complete disaster in every way. The 49ers were outplayed, outcoached. The refs were bad. The 49ers had terrible luck. They had lost one and then two quarterbacks. But you know what? I don't mind the Eagles being in it. I like their quarterback. I'm one of the odd people who actually likes their city, not always their sports fans. But I'm not sad the Eagles are in it, and I'm happy Kansas City is in it. I'm okay, Tom. I'll survive.
Okay. Well, I got my wish that the 49ers got beaten because I'm a Seahawks fan and I hate them with a passion. Right. But the other game was really, really good. I mean, it was competitive right down to the last second, and turns out Pat Mahomes is still pretty darn good, even on one leg.
He's the best quarterback there is, and the other person who some people think can have that title at some point in the near future is Joe Burrow, was in that game too. Look, it was a great game. They almost went to overtime and would have, except for a late flag. A few seconds left as Mahomes running out of bounds on one leg. He scrambled for 5 yards, roughing the passer, made it a 20-yard gain. They kicked the field goal with like 3 seconds left. Last year, the same two teams went into overtime. So the Bengals and the Kansas City are going to be good for years, and it was an entertaining game. Again, though, the referees marred that game, Tom. The NFL has a problem, and I don't know if they know it or if our listeners
I think they do know it. Well, I mean, the reffing was not very good yesterday.
It's a multi-billion dollar industry, and you have these amateurs. They're not professionals the way Major League Baseball's umpires are. And you have these gambling interests literally funding ads, funding shows, but advertising on the games. If you go on the Twitter or social media, people routinely questioning the integrity of the sport. And I don't have any reason to believe that the refereeing is anything other than incompetent. But if your defense is, no, we're not crooked, we're just incompetent, maybe you ought to address it.
Yeah. I mean, listen, it is a tough job, but there are certain, and I'm sure refs are going to miss calls every now and then, but man, they just seem to, you know, in games of that magnitude, some of the calls that were missed were, you know, yeah, potential game changers, yeah, if you will. All right, enough with the sports. Let's move on to politics, which is what we do. The story feels already old, and because the video was released on Friday night, so, you know, people have already had 3 solid days to digest and talk about the Tyre Nichols killing in Memphis. 5 African-American police officers, members of this elite Scorpion unit that they was recently formed to deal with street crime, were caught on tape, tackling this guy, beating him to a pulp. He later died in the hospital, and the video was released, and it's obviously, it's just horrific. The guy's like calling out for his mom, and he seemed to be, by all accounts, like a good guy, a decent person, was just going. He works at FedEx, was heading home to have dinner.
I don't even know why he was pulled over.
Yeah, it was supposedly a traffic infraction or something. So there's already been a lot said about this, Carl. I mean, obviously it's horrific, but this is something that, you know, we've talked about before and you've written about before, specifically the issue of police brutality and, you know, what we can do to solve the problem instead of what we normally do, which is talk about something that's tangential to the problem.
It's been framed in this country and elsewhere as a race issue. And I remember when this first burst on the scene, Ferguson, and I started writing about it. I wrote a column for us, a couple of pieces. I just don't know that that's the right way to look at it. I suspect it isn't. I think it isn't. And I'll tell you why. Until recently, until the Ferguson and this Black Lives Matter and these demonstrations, it was commonly assumed, criminologists would tell you this, Tom, between 500 and 600 Americans a year are shot by, or killed, usually shot by police officers. The FBI doesn't require, nobody keeps the stat. Nobody in government is required. They can tell you how many bicycles are stolen. The FBI uniform crime statistics, Tom, in going back in every state, in every county, going back 20 years, they can't tell you how many people are killed by police. I mean, Congress should have immediately demanded this. The FBI should require this. We don't know. The Washington Post stepped into the breach and did exhaustive, time-consuming searches. It's imperfect, but they found that the real number is twice that. It's between 1,000 and 1,100 every year. So imagine this. Every year, nobody knew the handle of this. The Post is getting most of this information off news accounts, so it's imperfect. A new generation of criminologists think the number is even higher than the Post has found. African Americans are killed by police at a higher rate than their population, but they're not the majority. Most, the plurality are whites, then come Hispanics, then African Americans. So if you think about this, it's a police training issue. It's a law enforcement issue. It's a criminal justice issue. It's a huge national scandal, but it's not really a racial issue. And because people talk about it as a racial issue, we haven't addressed it. Now, in Memphis, you have these five policemen who've been charged, fired and charged criminally instantly. They're black. The poor man they killed, Tyre Nichols, is black. And yet you still see the same old voices. Oh, it's still a racial issue. It's about white supremacy. It's about whiteness. It's about the police departments in this country were formed to gather up fugitive slaves. All this happy horse shit that has nothing to do with the real issue here. We do have a policing problem in this country. And if we only want to talk about race, we're going to ignore the problem. There are jurisdictions that have eliminated this problem, Tom. And how do they train their police officers? What's their ethos of that department? That's what we ought to be talking about, in my opinion.
And unfortunately, it seems like we're not going to end up. I mean, maybe something good will come out of this. Maybe it will shift the discussion. The fact that, you know, the cops were the same race as the victim in this case, because Lord knows if that had been an elite unit and those cops had been white, all hell would be breaking loose, right? I mean, it would be insane. So maybe something good will come of it, and we will shift. But again, I mean, we've run these pieces on Real Clear Politics over the weekend. Van Jones, or one yesterday on the front page from the Boston Globe, saying, you know, it's still a racial issue. This is still systemic racism is what we're dealing with. And until we tackle that, we're missing the point. So
I think that argument misses the point, personally. You want to demonize America? What's that got to do with it? Train these cops properly. Get better cops.
That's right. And that was another side note, is there was a story in the New York Post that one of these guys had a charge filed against him when he was a corrections officer for beating someone up, and that he got into the police. They had lowered the standards, the job requirements for police officers, because since 2020, with all the retirements from the force and all the, you know, defund the police rhetoric that had sapped morale and had people quitting and retiring early and whatnot, that a lot of municipalities around the country are desperate to get police officers into the system. And as a result, they've lowered the standard. So it may actually get worse before it gets better, Carl.
Well, this country needs to be doing something. These police, they're hired to protect the public. The footage of that was the most disturbing thing I've seen in a long time. The cops were acting like thugs. You think, we can't allow this in America.
Right. All right. Shifting gears. The other news of the weekend is that Donald Trump, who is the only declared 2024 candidate at this point, by the way, and who's been taking some shots in the media for having run a lackluster campaign thus far. He's been basically hanging out in Mar-a-Lago and playing golf. Made his first two appearances in early states. He went to New Hampshire and South Carolina. There was a poll that came out right around the same time over the weekend showing that Ron DeSantis is leading Donald Trump by double digits in New Hampshire, and then another poll out of South Carolina showing Trump with a 15-point lead over DeSantis. So he managed to take a couple shots at Ron DeSantis during this, called him disloyal, that he thinks he's being disloyal if he decides to run for president, and that DeSantis owes him everything because he was going nowhere until Trump endorsed him and put him over the top to become governor of Florida. So I guess the 2024 campaign is finally underway. But it seems like, in everything that I've read and seen, Carl, that Trump certainly isn't the juggernaut that he once was. It doesn't mean he's still not a huge and powerful force in Republican politics and may well end up winning the primary, depending on how it goes. But he doesn't have the same juice after he was elected in 2016 and then certainly in 2020. What do you think?
Well, Tom, he famously said when he was running the first time that under his regime, Republicans would be so dominant and successful. He said, you'll get sick of winning, he told Republicans. Well, three election cycles later, they're sick of losing. And they blame Donald Trump for the losing.
Some do.
Yeah.
Not all.
not all, not his core group of supporters, no, but the people who run the party. There's a good story on this, Tom, in The Atlantic by McKay Coppins, who's a political writer. And he says, what most Republicans privately, even people go up there with MAGA hats at rallies with the Donald, they come up and privately say, God, I hate this guy. I can't wait for him to die. And the writer says, wait a minute. He starts interviewing people, and that's actually their hope. Nobody on the record, of course, but people said this. I'll give you a couple of lines from it. Their rationale is straightforward. The former president is 76 years old, overweight, appears to maintain the diet of a college freshman, and believes, contrary to all known science, that exercise is bad for you. Why risk alienating his supporters when nature will take its course sooner or later? And then he quotes some guy and say, I can't wait till this guy dies. Then in parentheses, Trump's mother died at 88 and his father at 93. So this strategy isn't exactly foolproof. The way in politics, as it's understood until now, Tom, is if there's a person you think is causing your party problems, you run a candidate against him and beat him. There's two problems with that. The first one we saw in 2016. If you have one person that you designate to be the designated combat warrior, to use Tom Wolf's old phrase, fine. But you're going to have a crowded field. The way this shakes out right now, DeSantis doesn't get Trump one-on-one. Trump will get him with these other people, you know, Mike Pompeo, Nikki Haley, you know the list of these people say they want to run. And I don't doubt that they want to run. They all think that Joe Biden be easy to beat. So if they could just be nominated, you know. But in a crowded field, that's what happened in 2006. Trump won. He never got a majority in those early states. He got 30-45%. But in a field with 10 people, they were dominant victories. The other problem with it is that Trump himself has dropped hints that if he doesn't get the nomination, he'll run as a third-party candidate. So these poor Republicans who think Trump's going to get Biden reelected are left, you know, hoping he has a heart attack. It's pretty morbid, and it shows you that, well, they've run out of ideas.
Well, I mean, it is. I mean, he's still got his hardcore support of whatever that is, 25-30%. And to your point, that becomes a plurality in a multi-candidate race. And if somehow the field does consolidate behind DeSantis in time or someone else in time to deny him the nomination, is he going to just walk off the scene? And nobody thinks that. Nobody thinks that. So
you mentioned this the other day happens. In our pocket. He's not known for gracefully stepping aside. That's not his.
No. So we'll see how – it's going to be interesting to watch this play out. But it is definitely underway. There are a lot of candidates out there that are talking to folks and donors and staffers and whatnot. So this primary is certainly happening one way or another. All right, we're going to leave it there. I'm Tom Bevin, co-founder and president of Real Clear Politics.
I'm Carl Cannon, Washington Bureau Chief, and this has been the Real Clear Politics Takeaway for Tuesday, January 31st, 2023.